Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for joining Dr. Perletta Ramos and Raj Shell in Living Life Powerfully. We help you turn the ordinary into the extraordinary by claiming your power, getting your heart in the game, and learning how to live from the inside out. Let's create more happiness and success in your life.
Hello there. Welcome to Living Life Powerfully. I believe the topic of today's show is one of the most important conversations we can each have, because we're talking about relationships, and not just any relationship, but the most important relationship in your life. Most of us love being in love and being in relationship. We love how it feels to be close to someone else. Most of us love being with others. Love makes us feel full and alive and hopeful and excited, energized. I'm actually just excited talking about being in love. And in fact, we put so much of ourselves into developing connection and maintaining relationships with others, whether they be our parents or partners, spouses, friends, children, the list goes on, that sometimes we forget about the most important relationship, and that's the relationship that we have with ourselves. I'll go out on a limb to say that most of us don't really spend as much time and energy connecting or trying to connect with ourselves as we do trying to connect outside of ourselves with others. And we don't necessarily know the satisfaction and connection and level of intimacy and fulfillment that we can have by simply tuning and going within. And we're simply not taught how to do that. So feel free to dial in and join us on our conversation today. The dial-in number is 347-215-7827. Raj, what do you have to say about relationships with yourself?
Well, I am just so glad that we're talking about this, because, you know, there's so many things that the way we look at ourselves, there's so many things that maybe we don't like about ourselves. And it's really important to ask yourself the question, you know, what don't I like about myself? Maybe it's your looks or your health or your physique, maybe some of your behaviors, maybe it's your negative patterns. Maybe you don't like your career or the relationship you're in. But, you know, to me, Perletta, it's really important to identify whether it is just an aspect of yourself that you don't like, or you basically just don't like yourself. There's a big difference between these two. If it's only an aspect of yourself that you don't like, well, you know, you can just kind of begin to explore how much you're focusing on this aspect or imperfection that you have basically missed out on, you know, that all the other great aspects of yourself. So it's similar to, like, you know, taking that magnifying glass to something and it just becomes disproportionately bigger. Just realizing that you have a choice to focus somewhere else can help you shift that perspective. So we have to start at the very beginning of asking, okay, what exactly is it that I don't like about myself? Now, if you basically just don't like yourself, let alone, you know, love yourself, which is what you're talking about, there's just and, you know, you just feel this just deep self-loathing. You've met people like that. You know, then there must be just a lot of shame and guilt, or, you know, it's just so deeply ingrained and so deeply rooted that maybe, you know, you're going to need more than this show. You may need some professional help to overcome that deep-rooted shame and guilt.
It's interesting, Raj, that you start with the things that people don't like about themselves. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that later. I wouldn't necessarily assume that people have that much self-loathing to a degree, or shame and guilt. I think that we're all a combination, and a part of what developing a relationship with yourself and really cultivating that is understanding who you are and the totality of it, deepening the connection to yourself, because I think we all know ourselves to a degree, right? And most often we identify with more superficial things about ourselves, you know, where we live, where we grew up,
our, you know, our external factors, you know, our jobs, the roles that we have, gender, race. There's so much in society right now about, you know, gender and race and what's happening and to people as a result of those external factors. And because of that, that's where we focus much of our time. And so often I think when you're introduced to someone in a professional context, or actually it might be a social context, and you ask the person, you know, tell me about yourself, or, you know, who are you? And they start with their careers as opposed to more meaningful concepts related to maybe their values or their morals or who they really see themselves as. So that idea that you just mentioned, that there's a lot of shame, I wonder, is there really a shame or guilt, or people just don't think about it in a deeper context?
Well, you know, definitely they're not thinking, you know, the bigger picture. You know, when we're zoomed into something, it just becomes so big. You know, Perletta, this morning when I got up, I opened up one of my books, and somebody gave me this bookmark a long time ago. Actually, I think it was one of my clients. And it's a quote by Emerson, and it says, make the most of yourself, for that is all there is of you. That's it. And I just love this, considering that we're talking about this topic today. So I think this is the issue. We don't know how to make the most of what we've got.
Right. That's a very poignant point.
So,
I was going to say, it's the primary
you have to know who you are.
Right. Is how do you cultivate that, what we're talking about? How do you cultivate a healthy, loving relationship with yourself? I love that. I've not heard of that quote, and I appreciate you mentioning it. One of the things that speaks to me about this conversation is my own journey with respect to knowing myself. And I have to say, it's been a journey. I was completely oblivious most of the early part of my life. And I, you know, adolescent through, I would say through my mid-30s, because I was so focused on the external things that we talked about, you know, building a career, going to college, going to law school, developing a relationship and a family. I didn't get into the deeper conversation about who I was until all of those things, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Once I got my food, my shelter and housing, you know, and my economics together, then I was like, wow, how do I feel about my circumstances right now? I was so caught up in that busy life, which is perpetuated. That's what's perpetuated out there constantly, that the focus should be, this notion of cultivating a relationship with yourself is the opposite of where we're directed. And it's really challenging to actually be quiet or to spend that time that you need to understand who you are. Most often, I think we just don't do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know. Have you ever heard somebody say, like, maybe it's before an event and you're nervous, and people will say, just be yourself. Have you ever heard that, Perletta?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, even like, you know, remember you and I met in Toastmasters, and I think I even remember you saying that to me, Raj, just be yourself, because I used to be so nervous when I would do public speaking. And, you know, it's so interesting that the problem is that we are just not used to that. And often we're not good at just being us. We never learned how to be us. You know, we were originally, in fact, we were taught just the opposite of how, you know, not to be us. So there are two places in life. Think about this. There are two places in life that we are awesome at being ourselves: when we were children and when we are elderly. Okay, so ask a group of four-year-olds, who is the strongest in the class? And guess what? All of them will raise their hand. They don't even think for a minute. And It is just in the middle of these two phases of life that we learn to adapt and we learn to accommodate. I mean, look at the elderly. I mean, they'll tell you just like it is.
That's true.
You know, if they don't like something, they'll just tell you. So it's this middle phase that we have to think about.
Right.
Well, so when you're talking, go ahead.
I was going to say, you just described when I said I spent so much of my early part of my life working on all of those external factors, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was that's the phase. And so once you get down to it, I wasn't cultivating anything deeper because I was preoccupied. And so the one of the things I wanted to mention that I think is really important that you're speaking to with children is they completely trust themselves. They're not thinking about anybody outside of themselves. They're just completely in the moment. They honor what's true for themselves. And the same thing about those who are elderly. It's like they spent too much of their lives worrying and thinking about what other people think and saying, they'll tell you, I'm too old to deal with that. You know,
yeah, exactly.
It is what it is. You know, I used to hate that phrase.
Right.
It is what it is. But the reality is, the older I get, the more I get that. It's like there's enough of the pretense. The reality is, it is what it is. And what we're talking about in terms of abating this relationship with yourself really requires that we trust who we are, that we be honest with ourselves about who we are, and we live from that authentic place, which requires that we be respectful. And as we get into some of those things that you talked about, things we don't like about ourselves, that we treat ourselves with love and kindness, and that we have good communication within ourselves. Because sometimes we hide from ourselves, and obviously if we're going to hide from ourselves, we're going to hide from others when we're in relationship with them. So there are a number of things we can do in order to cultivate a deeper connection with ourselves. There are two main things that we're going to focus on for the remainder of our conversation. One is love, and self-love, and one is compassion, and that being compassion with the self. So when you think of love, Raj, what do you think about in terms of yourself?
Okay, so the way that I see love, okay, so there are two sides to love. One is the emotional, okay, that's that, you know, lovey-dovey feeling that we have. And then the other side is you can choose love, okay?
Okay.
So I can always choose love. And that's how we slowly become love. So I don't feel that, you know, that emotion lasts long because no emotion lasts for a long time. It just doesn't last forever. But the choice to love, so love is total, unconditional, positive regard for yourself, for other people, okay? An aspect of them. Maybe there's a part of yourself that you don't like, but you can still love. You can still choose to love yourself. That, you know, your core, and also you can love other people's core. So to me, love is just a beingness. It's like total acceptance, total compassion. Like you said, those important things like trust, honest, you know, respect, that kindness. You know, just that good communication with yourself, that's love. It just is everything. It's the basic building block.
One of the things that's really significant, I think, because we can say love yourself, and I think we do. We say it a lot. We say it very easily. Mm-hmm. Oh, you should love yourself. Oh, you know, like it's something that's easy to do. And on one level, it is. And on one level, it's really one of the most challenging things to do because we're so critical. We're so very critical. There's a book called Taming Your Gremlin that I read when I was going through one of my educational pursuits. And it was really helpful to me in understanding the chatter that goes on in my own head because I have what I call the beater upper. And this book basically is about taming that part of yourself that we all have that's in your head, understanding what it says to you, how it helps you, how it hurts you, and that's the gremlin. And this the person who developed this concept, I think, was brilliant. And so my gremlin was the consummate critic. And in my head, I consistently heard how I should be doing better, how I should be doing something different, how whatever I did was not good enough. And so a part of the challenge that I have had and continue to have to a degree, because this is something I work on in my life, I cultivate, is not feeling like whatever I did was good enough. Now that I identify that voice, though, I'm able to recognize it and not believe that it's true. So one of the main tenets that we want to get across in the conversation today is that self-love requires that we be honest, as we mentioned, and we listen to ourselves and understand that we all have a voice in our head sometimes that isn't loving, that isn't kind, that says unloving, unkind things to us. And what's really important is that we learn to distinguish that voice so that we don't believe that it's the truth when we hear things that aren't self-affirming.
So what you're speaking to is challenging everything that goes on in your head.
No, not everything. I wouldn't challenge loving, self-affirming thoughts, but when you identify the gremlin voice, what was important to challenge any self-doubting, self-deprecating, self-loathing, if it comes from shame, blame, or guilt, those are three things to automatically challenge, to use your word, and to not affirm and believe that they're true. So if you're having doubt about yourself, then recognize, oh, okay, that's that voice that is trying to protect me or whatever, but I don't have to believe that voice is true. So in my case, I just tell you the story. So I'm the first person in my family to go to college and graduate, certainly go to law school. And I had some goals in law school. One of them was to graduate with honors, and I did not do that. And so on my graduation day, my family was elated, and I was in my parents' bathroom crying. I felt like a complete failure because I didn't meet my mark. And they thought I was crazy, literally. Mm-hmm. They thought I was crazy. Because they were like, what's wrong with you? We're so proud of you. But see, that voice in my head was like, you failed. Yes, you graduated. All of that might be true, but you failed because what your goal was to graduate with honors. Now, it didn't matter that I was a single mother and that I was blah, blah, blah. You know, all of that was kind of like over there. Because what that voice was saying was it was not good enough. Whatever you did, it wasn't sufficient. Now, I still hear that voice, but I distinguish it, and it's like, no. I'm going to allow myself to feel good about this accomplishment. Right? I'm not going to believe that voice. That's a part of cultivating that relationship, because before I used to believe that voice. That's why my little interesting self was in the bathroom crying.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of that. So it's listening, the deeper level listening to yourself requires that you stop and pay attention to who you are and what you feel and how you want. We have to carve out this time to really pause and notice those voices as opposed to automatically believing that they're true, again, particularly when they stem from blame, shame, or guilt. So I think what's really important, at least for this conversation, is developing really healthy habits that allow for us to nurture the appreciation. I mean, one of the things that I do now that I think is very helpful, and when I work with my clients, I talk with them about, and that is acknowledging myself, which is sometimes people feel like, oh, I'm being arrogant, you know, to toot my own horn. I have a girlfriend, when I call her and she says, hey, how are you? And I'll say, I'm fantastic. And she'll say, and you're amazing. And it's like, the first time she said that, I was like, yes, I am, you know. And now I say that. I say self-affirming things because it's so easy to say things that are, you know, that are negative. And when we feel guilty, as somehow we're being arrogant when we say things that are positive about ourselves. And that's one of those other voices. It's like, oh, don't toot your own horn. There's nothing wrong with acknowledging who you are in the truth, right? And the truth is we're all magnificent manifestations of God. And when we allow our light to shine, we are fantastic and amazing. There's nothing arrogant about that. So we're going to go on to the next main thing, which is compassion. I love the Dalai Lama. He's done so much work in terms of bringing the Eastern philosophy to the West here and talking about actually both love and compassion and gratefulness and a number of other concepts. But he has a quote that says, if you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion. I think it's good.
You can't lose, right? It's a win-win situation.
Well, having a compassionate heart with yourself, it's so easy sometimes to be compassionate with others. But with ourselves, we kind of dismiss who we are and how we feel. And, you know, we dismiss our own struggle. Like, we should be doing better if we're struggling. We should be, you know, whenever there's a should, whether we're actually having a conversation about ourselves or about someone else, that's an opportunity to notice that we're not accepting where we are right now. Now, what is compassion? The simple definition is it's an emotion that is a sense of shared suffering, most often combined with a desire to alleviate or reduce the suffering of someone else, because that's the concept that we most often use it in, and to show special kindness to those who suffer. So, you know, we normally acknowledge compassion as having a sense of empathy, right? We feel for the situation from someone else. We can put ourselves in that situation and feel a desire to want to alleviate the pain that someone else is feeling. So when we turn that towards ourselves, instead of being in a place of judgment when we're suffering or we're struggling with something or we feel a challenge, like a job loss or not making enough money, or we don't like certain qualities about ourselves, to turn that inward, to turn the sense of compassion inward, is to really recognize that we're all doing the best that we can at our level of growth and development. And instead of being judgment, to hold love in its place for ourselves.
I am so glad, Perletta, that we're talking about compassion and self-love in the same conversation, because it is so much easier to show compassion to others versus ourselves, isn't it? I mean, it requires that self-acceptance. You know what I love to, like, I'll say to clients, you know, do you think you're smart? Or, because some clients come in here and they'll be like feeling pretty, like they think they're stupid or whatever, you know, that negative self-talk they're having about themselves. And I'll say, okay, you know, it doesn't matter, whatever. If you think you're smart, that's fine. If you think you're stupid, that's fine too. The thing is, you know, that what you mentioned about the shared suffering as far as compassion, I said, whatever you think of yourself, think that everybody else is like that too. So if you pick I'm smart, know that everybody else is smart too, okay? Because it just, you know, it changes everything. It's that when we get into that comparison of ourself with others, with, you know, others with ourselves, that's when we get into trouble. So if whatever you are, know that everybody else is the same. We're all in the same boat. And I think this is what helps kind of create that compassion in us. So, you know, And the problem with self-compassion is that, you know, we confuse it with self-compassion. We give compassion to others, but for ourselves, we confuse it. Either we confuse it with self-pity, or we confuse it with self-indulgence, or we confuse it like we're making excuses. And actually, compassion is exactly the opposite of these. You know, it's compassion is self-compassion. It's not egocentric, but it's just a much more connected and healthy way of relating to yourself. It's not self-indulgence. If you are picturing, you know, if you think that, you know, I'm just going to skip work and sit on a couch and eat ice cream all day, that's not what it is. Self-compassion actually wants health and well-being. And you're not making excuses. You're actually able to see yourself more clearly, which makes it easier for you to take responsibility, since you give yourself permission to make so many mistakes, which we do throughout the day.
Well, there are two things that you said that I think are really essential for cultivating the relationship. And the one is that it relates to our well-being. Reality is, some studies suggest that cultivating compassion makes us happier. So we get to experience a greater sense of well-being every day when we learn to be forgiving and to love ourselves and to be accepting. And the second piece is, we're all in this together. You know, at the end of the day, this is a human journey. And, you know, the upside of that is sometimes we think we're alone, and the truth is we're really not. right? I've heard speakers say, you don't know my struggle, or you don't know where I've come from. And the reality is we've all had a struggle. And some of us are still struggling. And, there's ups and downs and, ins and outs, ebbs and flows of life. And the compassion just really says, when we honor it, that wherever we are, it's okay. The most important thing is that we're learning from the struggle and that we use it as an opportunity to, improve our condition or to heal what we're suffering from. And when we have an open heart towards ourselves of, yes, I'm having a hard time right now, and my goal is to be better in this moment, then it doesn't compound the suffering with the layers of judgment and self-loathing that can come that you were talking about earlier. So one of the ways that you can cultivate a deeper understanding is really to notice how you aren't being compassionate with yourself. So when I mentioned earlier the gremlin and the Taming Your Gremlin, which is the book by Rick Carson, there are specific things that you can do to just notice the voice, that narrator that's inside your head that is giving you constant streams of thinking, and to dispute that voice, challenge it, and to not just challenge it, but replace it by developing a practice that's going to help with not just counteracting that, but developing a deeper love and connection with yourself. And what are some of those things? Well, there are a few things that we talk about pretty consistently. One is meditation. And meditation can occur in many different forms. It doesn't necessarily include sitting in a room for 45 minutes. You can do walking meditation. You can just having a present moment-to-moment awareness of whatever you're doing is one of in others. And really focusing in on that when you're having a challenge, as opposed to having a judgmental thought, or when you have that judgmental thought, notice it and then immediately turn it into a thought of compassion and empathy for yourself. And then practicing forgiveness. I know, and then I'm going to say forgiveness and letting go. Because sometimes we forgive and then we just hold on to it. It's like, I'll forgive you, but I'm never going to forget. And then I'm going to hold on and be angry and resentful of yourself, right? It doesn't have to be someone else. So really practicing forgiveness. Because like you just said, Raj, we all fall short sometimes of our own goals and expectations of ourselves. But when we're able to forgive ourselves and let it go, we get to walk without holding our heads down in shame, but to feel like, I learned from that, and this is who I am today, and this is how I'm going to make different changes right now. And then I would say engage in regular acts of kindness. Doing things for yourself that make feel fantastic and amazing is so important. We spend so much time focused on the world, others, work, family, et cetera. And cultivating a relationship with yourself requires small acts of kindness for yourself, toward yourself. It helps you to feel good and grounded and special. Sometimes if we don't have a relationship with someone else that does those things for us, we feel void because we're looking for someone else outside of us to fill that cup. And the reality is we have all of what we need to feel fantastic and amazing in our own lives.
Oh, that's beautiful, Perletta. I mean, what you're speaking to is, what I get from this conversation is that love and that self-acceptance for yourself. It was Carl Rogers who said, the curious paradox is that when I accept myself as I am, then I can change. So many of us are using self-criticism to motivate ourselves, right? And there's motivation inherent in self-compassion, but it has to do more with wanting health and well-being for yourself, okay, in an environment of encouragement and support. And that's what I'm, what I'm getting from what you're saying is, self-compassion is that constant encouragement for yourself and that support. But self-compassion itself focuses more on self-acceptance first.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost.